Welcome to Let's Relieve Regret, the uplifting podcast where we talk about how to relieve what you're worrying about.
It can feel so good to finally let go. Let go of past hurts, let go of old grudges, let go of self-doubt, self-shame.
The thing is, we aren't always given the tools to let go. We're told to get over it, or it's time to move on. But how do we do that?
We will share our stories, tools, and strategies of how we let go to help you let go.
Let's begin.
Content warning. This episode of Let's Relieve Regret has general discussion of sexual assault and specific discussion of rape. If you need support, please reach out to your local crisis center. For more resources, please visit findahelpline.com and endingviolencecanada.org. The links will be in the show notes. Hey there. If you're a regular listener of Let's Relieve Regret, you'll notice that this episode is a little bit different than our regular episodes. We'll be skipping our check-in. We'll be skipping our causes for applause. We're just going to get right into a very deep and personal story from Victoria. So I'm your host, Shadow Ball. We're here with my co-host slash today, someone who's just going to be sharing a story.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Victoria.
And if you're new here, please check out some of our other episodes. We tend to treat regret as something just like kind of fun in a way. Like we do a lot of more uplifting content with our other episodes. And I think this episode will get there too, but we've been teasing for the last couple episodes that we were going to do a Me Too episode, and this is that episode. So today I'm just so grateful that Victoria is going to be sharing. And Victoria, do you want to provide any, you know, context before you jump in, or do you just want to jump in and share your story today?
Yeah, I think the reason that Shadow and I wanted to do this episode, and it's because I want the discussion to keep going. This isn't something that I hide from. It's not something that I'm ashamed of. It's something I've done a lot of work on. It's something that I've done therapy for. It's something that happened to me. But I want to keep the conversation going. And what we're learning more and more as this podcast evolves, because it's definitely changed since the beginning when a lot of our regrets were like plucking our eyebrows or not moisturizing our skin, which are real legitimate like regrets that go through our mind. But as we get guests come on, some of our guests are really opening up and sharing some really deep regrets. And we're so honored that that's happening and that we're evolving into kind of the safe space or platform to either come on as a guest and tell your story or to listen to it. Cause I think both are equally important. Hearing other people's stories of struggle and how they overcame it or how they're still struggling with it, how they're learning to cope, I think is so important for us to feel less alone, especially when it's things like regret and shame and, for today, sexual assault or harassment. And, you know, I was really excited when the Me Too movement happened. And I feel like it's died down a little bit. And I think for this topic, for me, I feel very passionately about it. We need to keep the conversation going. So this is my contribution to continuing the conversation, to continue to create safe spaces for women to listen, to be heard, or just to feel not alone. So my hope in sharing my Me Too story is that even if it just helps one person listening to this podcast feel less alone, when we start to feel less alone, or when we hear a story that's maybe similar to ours, or the feelings are similar to ours, we start to realize that we aren't alone in the struggle. And that there are people out there that can help us and understand us and just be heard. So yeah, I could probably ramble on forever, but I think it's really important to have these conversations and to speak openly about them, because there is no shame. It's not, what happened to me is not my fault. And it happened to me 20 years ago. And it's, I don't know, how do I say this? I've learned that it's not my fault, right?
Good. Yeah. No, that's really helpful to set the stage here. So I'm just gonna let you take the lead here and share your story. I think you said it earlier, and I'm gonna repeat, like, I'm honored that you're trusting me with sharing your story today. So please
I
go
also
ahead.
want to say, everybody, this is a bit different than other episodes where Shadow and I genuinely don't know what each other's going to say. Shadow knows what I'm going to say today. We've talked about it off mic.
Yeah, and that's why excited's the wrong word, but I do feel this like sense of, I guess, belonging, and that feels really nice in a way. So again, thank you for your trust, and please take it away.
Okay, I'm not even going to start it with I have something that I regret that I want to share, because really this is just about me sharing my story, and I hope that it makes other people feel comfortable sharing their stories. Or if this sounds similar to your story or makes you think about something. And the other thing I want to say is all stories are important. All stories matter, all experiences matter. When people say, oh, well, I only had someone touch me and this other person was raped, so their story is more important than mine. In my opinion, that all stories matter. All forms of sexual harassment, sexual abuse, and assault matter. And if you feel violated, you feel violated, period. And your stories matter. So I'm also going to preface this with saying there's been many stories in my life too that I'll probably bring up later too. But there's big T trauma and little T trauma in life. And the way that I have learned about big T trauma versus little T trauma is kind of big T trauma is these moments in your life where you're like, this was me before that thing happened, and this is me after that thing happened. And they have this really big effect on your life and might change your brain, the structure of your brain, how you react to things. And so this is one of my big T traumas. And another one I've talked about many times on the podcast is my overwhelm and burnout to the point where I was completely paralyzed in my body. But this is my other big T trauma in my life. And that is when I was in first year university, I was raped. And it was my first week of first year university. So when I went off to school, I was trying out for the rowing team and I got into the university that I wanted to go to. And the first week of school during Frosh Week is when the rowing team tryouts are. So I pretty much skipped Frosh Week and did the rowing team tryouts, and I ended up making the varsity A team, so the top tier team for in a women's boat. And the rowing program at that time was really huge. There was a men's A team, a men's B team, a men's C team, same on the women's side. So the rowing program at the university probably had about, I don't know, 80 rowers and coxswains. As you know, I'm a coxswain. And so it was a lot of people. It's a lot of people to navigate. But the other thing the rowing team was pretty famous for was throwing epic parties, epic house parties, because our team was so big. And one of the biggest things was rookie initiation. It's not called hazing, it's called rookie initiation. What would happen is you would go out for dinner with your individual crew, so your 8 or 9 people, and they would do some silly games with you or whatever. And then we would all meet at the end of the night, and the whole entire team would be there. And there'd be things going on at that party too. So, as an example, and this is back in the year 2000, even when I look back at it, I'm like, oh, things were so, females were being so objectified. We had to walk around in lingerie all night. When we got to the house party, they had literally covered the entire backyard in saran wrap and put oil all over it and had us like oil wrestle each other where all the men were watching. I mean, the rookie men had to walk around in like women's underwear around campus. Like it was a really highly sexual and really highly objectified. And there was a rower from my hometown that was a couple years older than me that was on the men's A team. So he was a pretty important rower, and I thought I could trust him. And he was feeding me drinks all night. And he took me back to my dorm room, and I thought I could trust him. And I knew something was wrong. I had experience drinking. I grew up in a small town. Okay. Like I started drinking underage, like, right. But this was like a totally different level of I think I see, I even have problems saying I think because I know deep down inside of me that I was drugged. And I was taken back to my dorm room and then I blacked out. And I have some visions, and it really is how many people describe it. The way that I remember it is me floating in the ceiling of my dorm room, looking down and watching this happen to me. And I don't remember all the pieces, but I remember small pieces of me just having an out-of-body experience, being completely passed out. So when that news story happened a few years ago about the girl passed out down in the States, the girl passed out in an alleyway and she was being sexually assaulted, I was like, that happened to me. I was completely passed out. I was unconscious or semi-conscious, but felt unconscious because I had this out-of-body experience and remembering it. And when I woke up the next morning, I knew something had happened. I didn't feel right. I felt like I'd had rough sex. I was in pain in my vagina. I knew something had happened, but I went straight to denial that nothing happened. And then I went straight to, oh, it was a one night stand. Ha ha ha. It's funny because people brag about these things, especially kind of on this rowing team, was like, who hooked up with who last night? Who hooked up with who after the big party last night? Oh, it's funny, right? But ultimately, what happened is I actually blocked it out of my mind for about 4 months. And then the memory started coming back kind of in for pretty much all the first year. The memory started coming back around March or April. I started remembering what happened to me. And that's when I realized that I'd been raped. But I think deep down inside, I knew that I had been drugged and raped. But back then, again, this was 24 years ago. There was a lot of shame around it. There was a lot of not talking about it. There was a lot of objectification of women. And when I finally started realizing what happened to me, I started talking to my other teammates. And I said, you know, this is what happened to me. And a few of them were older, like they were in second or third year. They'd had the rookie initiation night a few years before, or whatever. And 70% of them had had a similar experience. Had woken up in a bed with someone, didn't remember what happened, remembered a drunkenness that was a blackout. Now, I don't have evidence of this, and that's the hard thing. But what I believe was happening was that the men's rowing team were keeping track and it was a game. I believe that that is what was happening. And I later found out that there was bets going on around who could hook up with the lightweight women rowers, because the lightweight women rowers were the ones that were under 130 pounds and small and whatever, right? So I did find that out later, but I don't know if they were keeping a book or if they were keeping track somehow, and I believe it had been gamified. Because to find out on my rookie initiation, the other rookies had had a similar experience of sexual assault on the same night is pretty, I don't even have a word for it. And so it took me a lot of time to heal. And I'm healing. I think I'll always be healing. But what's healing for me is telling my story. And for a really long time, I didn't tell my story. And again, it was a very different time. It was before Me Too. I had a boyfriend at the time that went to the same high school as this person that had raped me, my boyfriend from back home. And he accused me of cheating on him and making up the rape story so that it made me look better and that I actually just cheated on him. I ended up breaking up with him, but
Good.
it was a lot of and these things were accepted then, right? Is at the end of my first year, I told my coach what had happened, and nothing happened.
Right.
The rowing team didn't do anything. And when I was in second year, I, with all of my team, we only had a couple rookies, but we kind of said, I said, listen, some of us have to agree to not drink at the
Right.
rookie initiation party. And we have to make sure that whenever it's a rowing party, now the university didn't sanction the rowing, like these were parties we were throwing ourselves for the rowing team, but like whenever there's a rowing party, that we have a buddy system and we make sure no girls are going home with any boys. And we started looking out for each other. The thing that's really sad about that is that we had to do it ourselves. And when I graduated from university, I told the head coach what had happened to me, and I told him that I had told my coach. You know, he cried and he said, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry that happened to you. Or maybe he didn't know. I don't know. But like, 'cause I really love the head coach, actually. He's a really nice man. But the way that I looked at it while it was happening was I told my coach, who wasn't the head coach, but this person that did this to me was a really important part of the men's A team, the top team. And so we protect our athletes, which is like so similar to that story in the States, where the judge let the guy off for basically raping a girl unconscious in an alleyway. He's a hockey player, he's a young man, he made a mistake. I just, you know, and yeah, so that's my story. And in a nutshell, what I generally tell people is I was drugged and raped on my rookie initiation night for the rowing team at university, and it affected my entire university experience. And to be honest with you, I don't remember university. I really don't remember university. And that's part of PTSD, is blacking things out and pruning memories out of your brain. I really don't remember a lot of details about the social aspect of university. I remember details about what I learned because it was, I still talk about what I learned in university. So I remember the academic stuff, but I don't remember people's names. I don't remember a lot of social aspects for the whole like 4 year experience. Like I don't remember a lot of the social aspects of university. I've completely blacked them out of my mind. And I know that I was, for lack of a better word, I went crazy. Like I, for really lack of a better word, like I was a volatile person. I had an eating disorder because I was trying to control my weight to stay on the rowing team, and it was something that I could control. I was highly emotional. I was highly sensitive. I was full of anger. I, you know, self-soothed by smoking a lot of pot. I had insomnia. Like, I really don't remember a lot. And once I started like the real healing process kind of after university, because I did start seeing a therapist in the middle of university, but it's taken years to heal. And part of healing is telling my story. And that one of the most interesting parts about it was as soon as I did come out and tell the people I was closest to, my housemates, my rowing team, when they started coming forward and saying the same thing happened to me, or I've had a similar thing happen to me. And that's why we need to talk about it. That's why we need to talk about it. And it's interesting with, like, you know, owning your own business is marketing. People are like, tell your story. What's your story? And I think there's like stories that you tell and store. I don't know how to put this. I was thinking about this the other day. It's like, this is my story, but it's different from my story of overwhelm. Like I'm proud of my story of overwhelm, but this is a story that I don't want to tell as part of my business model or as part of my, like, I'm a survivor. It's like, this is a story, but I don't want it to become all of who I am. I tell it to educate people and I tell it to open conversations, but I also don't want to, I don't know, keep re-victimizing myself. And I don't feel like I'm a victim when I tell the story anymore, but there's been so much processing and so much that's happened with it. And then I've had like other small things happen to me as well, that I think those stories are equally important too. Like, I had a coworker grab my ass at work once when I was working in a community center. And when I went to the supervisor told me that I'd been flirting with him and that it was my fault. Right. So I just, all of these stories matter. All of these stories matter. But my big T story, that's it. I was drugged and raped on my rookie initiation night for rowing. And it's taken me a lot of time and therapy and healing. And there's still sometimes, still to this day, there's times when I think maybe I said yes, and maybe he didn't rape me, and maybe it was my fault. There's still times that I think that. There's still times that I think maybe I made it all up. Maybe my ex-boyfriend's right and I totally made it all up. Mm-hmm. Like I still, the culture around these sorts of things, it's still these deeply ingrained thoughts that are programmed around it. And back then, I know the laws are different in Canada than in other countries, but even back then, the law was if you're inebriated and you say yes, it's still no. Mm-hmm. And I'm so proud of Canada for having that law.
Yep.
I really am. Yeah,
absolutely.
And I'm totally open to feedback and
I was just going to ask, do you want feedback and questions? Because the first thing, again, just want to say thank you so much for sharing, because I think that fear of it becoming the story versus a story is very real. I think that is a very real thing that I think holds a lot of people back from sharing. So I guess for me, something that came up when you were talking about, like, you know, blocking out the 4 years and all these habits you kind of formed in that time, that just sounded to me like emotional dysregulation. Like you were a completely dysregulated
totally.
Person. Have you been able to like forgive yourself for that reaction?
I think there's still parts of me that haven't, that I'm still working on. I think there's a lot of shame. Like I don't talk to any of my housemates. I left you like when I left university, I basically cut off all contact with everyone that I, you know, it was really, and it was so weird. I was like at a spa a couple of years ago, you know, one of those water spas, and I was sitting and this girl came down and sat beside me and was just totally staring off into space. She goes, "Hey, I know you." And I looked at her and it had been one of my housemates. And I totally forgotten about her. Like, that's what I mean about blacking it out. And she goes, "We live together." And I was like, "Oh my God." And we started talking. But even in that moment, I was like, "I don't want to be here. I'm so ashamed of who I was." I'm sure I fast tracked through university too. Like I left a year early. Like at one point I was taking, like, I just put everything into learning, like a full course load was like 5 courses. At one point I was taking 8 courses a semester. Wow. So I literally did I only stayed for 3 years instead of 4, but I did a 4-year degree in like 3 years basically. And I just remember feeling so much shame. This was literally like maybe 4 years ago. And I just remember feeling so much shame, like just feeling like, oh God, I wonder what they talked about me and how much they made fun of me that year that I didn't live with them. And they thought I was crazy and selfish and those sorts of things. Right. And it was just a really interesting experience for me to run into a housemate. And and it was massive emotional, what'd you call it? Emotional
dysregulation.
Yeah. And I also think like 24 years ago, this happened in the year 2000. We didn't understand it or have the support, as many supports as we do now. And so like pre-Me Too, there was so much shame around it that I didn't even know how to handle what my shame was or what shame was, or that these are totally normal behaviors for someone that's been assaulted.
Yeah, I think it's weird too, because then we also accepted like the normal behavior of your like assaulter. Like this person, it's just so interesting, because for me something that comes up is your story reminds me of something that happened in my first year of university. It may have been Frosh Week, but it might have been just in those first few weeks, but definitely September, my first year of university, where It happened to someone else, not me. And everyone knew about it, which also, how embarrassing. Like, not embarrassing for her or him, but like all of us. Like, just I carry this like great source of embarrassment and shame when that happened because I know I didn't believe her. I didn't. I believed him. I believed the st and I also don't know if that was just like mob mentality or like you're saying, like we were just kind of accepting different behaviors then that hopefully have changed now. Because my experience was from 2005, and this person was brave enough to tell everyone what happened right away, and we all didn't believe her. And like, I'm so sad about that and how that happened. And I'm also like, I want to hope that it's got better, but part of me is worried that maybe it's worse or the same.
Part of me is too. I think a lot of great stuff came out of the Me Too movement, and I think that we need to keep the momentum going. And it doesn't mean that we all have to be out there pounding the pavement, talking to parliament or government or whatever. We need to tell our stories, right? And that's what I'm doing here. And we need to realize that the amount of people that where there's false allegations, stats still show it's about 2%. That's so low. And so my immediate reaction always is to believe the person. And I really think that that should be everybody's reaction because nobody wants to tell this, nobody wants to say this happened to them.
No,
No, nobody wants to feel these feelings. And to just, I mean, I don't really know how to explain, to just like explain the violation. It's just one of your most sacred things, and you don't have control over it. And that's extremely violating. It's extremely violating, and your whole nervous system takes over. The older culture of like, oh, well, it happens to everybody. Avoid it, push it down, compartmentalize it, which is, I think, what women have been doing for hundreds and hundreds of years. It's not healthy. It's not healing. It's not, that's not how we should be dealing with it. And I can say too what you're saying in the not believing. I think we've all had that. There's male preconditioning in women just as much as there is in male because it's in society, in our male-dominated society, right? And yeah, I think when a famous person's accused, and you really like them and you like their art, your first reaction is, no, it can't be true. They must be making it up.
And for me, I think that's because, as women, we're still kind of trained to see each other as threats, as opposed to the true threats, which is very too bad. Because, like, even this person that I'm referencing, we did become friends in university, and then I did believe her. And I also found a pattern where if I had a personal connection to the person that was sharing and being brave enough to open up, I believed them right away. But if I didn't have that personal connection, my belief defaulted to, well, they're making it up. And it was really during Me Too where it finally made sense in my head that the people who are brave enough to share their story, that's the reason they're doing it. They're brave. That they're brave. They're not coming up with it for a sneaky, weird, like clout or credit or trying to destroy another person. They're already destroyed inside, and they're trying to be brave enough to tell people, hey, don't interact with this person because you're going to feel awful after. And for some reason, we're like, oh, well, she must just, be making it up. And
Why do you think
I don't
we
know.
do that?
I think there's comfort. I think there's a weird, like almost like a comfort in the distance of like, it's easier to understand that someone would make something up that's salacious than to actually believe that someone you admire could be capable of that behavior.
Can I ask you a question about when you heard about this person in university and you didn't believe her. How did you hear about the story, and were there men in the room?
I heard about it how a lot of us heard about it, which was not from her. It was just gossip. I think it was just gossip that was going around. And I would love to say that when it got to me, I stopped it. I stopped the flow of that gossip. But absolutely, I shared it with other people. And I mean, again, it's your first year university. You're thinking, oh, I'm making friends. You're doing all this stuff. And gossip is, the currency of friendship. Like that's
Also, like there's, and I'm not using this as an excuse because
no.
it doesn't make it okay.
No,
Our brain before the age of 25 isn't fully developed. And again, this is not an excuse because you still know right from wrong. From the age of being a child, morally, you know right from wrong. But in terms of the gossip, we have a lesser sense of consequence before the age of 25. So in terms of like the gossip, we're addicted to that, or we love that. It's salacious, as you say, but we don't understand the deeper consequence of gossiping about someone, whereas we might now. I mean, I hope most adults do, but you know what I'm saying. But yeah, I just like the gossip train around those things too. Kind of what I'm saying with my experience is it was like cool, right? Like the guys were like so and so hooked up with so and so or whatever bet they had going on. And then it creates this other form of gossip that's still driven by men objectifying women and that part of the culture. But in your story, you became friends with this person.
I did, later. And we did get to kind of talk about it. I don't know if we actually I don't know if I ever really came out and said to her, like, I'm so sorry that I didn't believe you or whatever. More so we just kind of became friends, and that kind of got swept under the rug. And then something else happened with her in our later year of university. And at that point we were friends, and I remember even when that happened, I did believe her right away, and I was there to support her and everything else. And again, I still didn't give a chance to say, oh, and I do believe you. I believe everything that's happened to you that was bad. Like, I do believe your version of the story. I never told her that, and that's also a bit of the regret too, because, and I get, but again, like I didn't know, but right, like I, so if we're talking about that, then that's like 2008. So again, not that long ago, but definitely before me too, and definitely before I was. Oh man, I hate to use this kind of language because I think that this is also kind of bad now, but the slang of the time is the pick me. I don't know if you've heard this,
I've
but
never
pick me
heard that.
girls.
No.
So sometimes pick me will be kind of referencing to people who might say, like, I don't need feminism. And they're a girl. So they're like, oh, feminism, I don't need that. Like, why are women still so ridiculous about things? But they're kind of saying it to say, hey, I'm a cool girl. I don't need feminism. Maybe a boy will like me if I say these things. So there's this kind of thing that's happening. And I know that I was like that. I definitely liked raunchy comedy. I liked being with the bros. I didn't have very many female friends because female friends are what? Drama. And I don't like drama. I prefer hanging with the guys. The guys are cool. And I'm a cool girl. And like that kind of stuff is very strong, very intoxicating.
And it's also like putting women against women again, right? Because in order for you to be cool, it's hanging around the guys, but then you have to change who you are to what they think is cool. And maybe that's watching porn, and maybe that's, maybe that's objectifying women and you don't even know you're doing it. It's adopting male preconditioned biases by osmosis, by hanging out with them. And this feminism is a dirty word is, I mean, I have a minor in women's studies too, like which I picked up in like second year. So my brain was like healing in the background, while I was not healing in the concrete. it was like first wave feminism, second wave feminism, third wave feminism, right? And it evolves as society evolves and as we need it, but it's never a dirty word. It's about standing up for women's rights and women's needs. This campaign happened about bra burning women and feminism are bad.
Right.
Why are we still using that from like second wave feminism when women were fighting in the 60s and 70s? And it's become like feminist means you're a man hater, right? Like that is not what feminism means. And we need to take the word back. And like, it's not cool to be a feminist. I literally had this conversation with my father-in-law once, like 10 years ago. He sat down with me once and he's like, so Victoria, I'm like, yeah. He goes, you're a feminist, right? And I go, yeah. And he goes, so that means you hate men, right? And I was like, he's like, explain that to me. And I'm like, that's not what feminism means. I don't hate men.
Right.
I just want equity, equality in some spaces, equity in other places. We're not like, I mean, I have a uterus. You don't. There are differences.
Right.
I just want fair treatment, and I want the programming that's in our brains around it to be changed. So when we learned about this idea of male preconditioned bias, which kind of came out of the Me Too movement too, is, oh, wow, so many things in our society have been dominated by men and we haven't even realized it, like healthcare studies. A lot of the stats we use in the healthcare industry are based on studies that have been done primarily on middle-aged white men. I'm not a middle-aged white man. So the standard for whatever my thyroid should be at isn't the same as what a thyroid should be at for a middle-aged white man. Like that's what feminism is now. It's trying to figure out how do we get the right information? And how do we tell our so that's one side of it. And the other side of it back to this is how do we tell our stories and be heard? And how do we create change with that? And I was thinking, like, as you were saying, you didn't believe her. If anybody out there was going, this subject makes me feel so uncomfortable, I wouldn't know what to say if somebody came and told me their story. Honestly, all you have to say is, I hear you.
Right.
I mean, that's all I wanted was to someone to say, I hear you and I believe you. I believe you. If this had happened to me in a time when people were more willing to believe, I maybe wouldn't have held it in for so long. I maybe would have shared it with more people. And I really needed to be told that I wasn't lying. I really needed people to say to me, I believe you. And so one of the first people I told, it was my boyfriend at the time, what happened? I don't believe you. You're making it up because you cheated on me. Right. And I didn't even know how to tell people. I didn't even know how to come out with it because I just wanted people to say, I believe you. And the first people that said, I believe you were my rowing team, because as soon as I said it, they were like, oh yeah, same thing happened to me. And I feel like I was one of the first people to be like, it's not okay. Because there was a real culture of, yep, it happened.
Yeah.
This is just part of the process. And maybe that was them compartmentalizing too in some ways, but it's just if someone tells you, just tell them that you believe them and that you love them and that you hear them and thank them for sharing their story with you. That's probably the best advice I can give around it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really useful. All levels of it too, right? Like I'll just kind of quickly talk about the fact that, like, I thankfully have never been raped, but I have been sexually assaulted. And when I was talking to my husband last night about the fact that we'd be recording this episode today, I kind of made like a, you know, cute little joke about it. You know, like I just felt like I had to, like I felt this immense pressure to be like, yeah, we're going to talk about Victoria's story. And then I don't know if I'm going to be sharing any of my stories. And he kind of looked at me and went, do you have those kind of stories? I'm like, well, I'm a woman. Of course I've been sexually assaulted.
Yeah.
And he was like, Shadow, come on. And I was like, okay, like, yeah, I do. And
did you tell him?
We kind of talked about a couple of them, but also like, I was like, but they're not like, I could tell that I was in this like headspace of like, I just want to make it a joke. I just want to make it light because I've never had that like line crossed before, and I don't want him to worry, or like him to feel like I'm carrying this burden around all the time or whatever. And
I
it's so
think that's
even
a really
then,
normal response, but that doesn't mean that it's the right
no, it's
response
not
either.
right. I'm not saying it is right. I'm just saying, like, I didn't have the bandwidth last night to really get into it. But, like, at the same time, it was just, I could really see the wheels churning for him too. Like, the way, 'cause, again, because I just made it like a joke. Like, yeah, I'm a woman. Of course I've been sexually assaulted. And, like, that's
We're
like,
preconditioned to make it more comfortable for them. And that's our male preconditioning. And even in you saying, I didn't want him to carry the burden of it, to carry the burden of what? To help you carry the burden of the burden that you're carrying all the time. You
And
want
I'm
him to feel
yeah.
bad on behalf of all men in the world.
Well, and I know he has a big day today. He's traveling today, so I don't want, I want him to get good sleep, and if I bring this up before, he has to go somewhere, then I'm being kind of negative again. Like, it's so
See
interesting.
that, and
Like,
that's the male right? Like, it's not your responsibility. And he actually asked you, which means he wanted to hear it. He can
totally.
handle it, right? And it's interesting because when I told my mom, she told me not to tell my dad, and I didn't tell my dad for years. And I regret that. I regret that.
Well, we prioritize their comfort, right? And like, yeah, I don't know how we get over that really, but just
It's not my responsibility to make them comfortable. And however my husband wants to carry the load with me, it's how he carries the load. I told him the story pretty much right from the get-go when we got together. I wanted him to know. I mean, we got together 3 years after it happened to me. And this is something I'm healing from. And like how he chose to support me was amazing. How he chooses to carry that information now is amazing. And the thing is like it's not my responsibility how he carries it. It's his choice how he chooses to support me. It's not your responsibility to I mean it's like if you step back and look at it rationally, it's almost like in the 50s when housewives were like, keep everything from the husband so he can just do his like it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It's like re-victimizing ourselves.
Yeah, we don't want to tell the people who are responsible that they hurt us, and we don't want to tell the people who have never hurt us that we've been hurt. Like, it's both things, and it's like, well, then who do you tell? You just sit on it and get an ulcer?
Well,
Like,
then we're just victimized twice. We're victimized out of not getting support and not being believed. And then, like, we're victimized in terms of taking on the burden and the emotions of other people around it. It's not my job to make you feel comfortable around it. It is my choice to educate people around it. And that's why we're having this podcast episode today. That's my choice, though. I don't have to educate people around it, but it is my choice to educate people around it. But that doesn't mean that I'm taking on the burden of how they feel about it. But it's my choice to educate people by talking about it. You just gave like a perfect example, right? And Ben can choose what he does with it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's so interesting, right? And we still have these things programmed into us as women, unfortunately, or women of a certain age, maybe 20-year-olds don't have these things programmed into them. I have no
I hope
idea,
not, but
but like to protect men from their feelings. I don't need to
well,
protect a man from his feelings.
yeah, and I think again, when you see rape prevention posters, it's always like on the person who would be victimized. So it's like, have a buddy system, do this, do that, like do all these things. Don't drink too much, don't tempt them, don't this, don't that. And like the rape prevention isn't just like, don't rape people. If you think you might rape someone, don't go to a bar. If you think you might rape someone, don't drink. Like, that's never the prevention. The prevention's on the victim, and
Well,
it's horrible.
this is a whole other thing. I'm gonna say something that might be like really out there,
Okay,
everybody.
sure.
But this I've been thinking about this obviously for like over 20 years, is I actually think that there should be a separate judicial system or a separate court with different regulations and rules for sexual assault. So in this country, as in most countries, you're innocent until proven guilty. Mm-hmm. It's on the onus of the prosecutor to prove that you're guilty.
Right.
I believe, and stats back this up, that only 2% of people have false allegations. I believe that there should be a separate court system for people accused of sexual assault where they're guilty until proven innocent. And it's mm-hmm. on the onus of the defense to prove that they're innocent, mm-hmm. which is different from how our court system works, because it's on the onus of the prosecution to prove them guilty. And mm-hmm. I think that it should be the opposite for those that are accused of sexual assault.
Right.
It's a wild idea.
Oh, no, I think it's so interesting. I think that's a very wonderful, interesting idea. Unfortunately, my government part of my brain that should be gone by now is still like, what a logistical nightmare. Like, you'd have to hire different judges and hire different lawyers and all these other things. And like, the current system's already so stretched, and you're going to, you know, and.
But what's justice and what's moral mm-hmm. and what's fair? Because often in the court system, it's not actually about what's just and fair and right. It's about arguing if this evidence can be brought in, mm-hmm. if this can't, if that, right? And so there's holes there. And I think there's huge holes with sexual assault. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm talking in a perfect world. I get what you're saying. Yeah. Just, if it doesn't matter, it doesn't mean it should not.
Oh,
happen,
no. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that idea a lot, Victoria.
Something needs to change. And I, to answer the question, listeners out there, if you're wondering, I did not pursue this legally. Mm-hmm. I made a decision with my family not to, because I blacked it out. There was no evidence. And we knew that if I did pursue it, it would be a he said, she said. I would lose. And why would I put myself through that much that much stress when it was already, I was already cracking.
Yeah.
Basically, for lack of a better word. And I had no evidence. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, I got up the next morning, I knew something was wrong. I had a shower. I went back to bed.
Yeah.
And like cried the whole day because mm-hmm. I knew something was wrong. But like, I had no evidence. I didn't get a rape kit done. I didn't, there was no evidence. It just would have been And that's what I mean too about innocent till proven guilty, or I don't mm-hmm. know. I don't know what mm-hmm. the answer is, but there has to be a better way than how we're doing it now.
Yeah. Well, because my under.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
No. I was just going to say, my understanding is that even if you don't take a shower, because that's the number one thing, is you absolutely cannot take a shower, and you get your rape kit done, my understanding is that these rape kits are just sitting in like a closet at a lot of like places and not.
Yeah. I'm not sure about Canada versus the States, but yeah, I know mm-hmm. some of them don't even get tested. And mm-hmm. also, it's very invasive. Mm-hmm. The experience of getting a rape kit done can be traumatizing on its own. I'm not saying don't get it done, but I'm saying like, there needs to be someone there helping you, guiding you through it. Like, and I think that's where some regret lies in for me too, in terms of, for a long time, I felt like, well, I identify as being like a feminist. I'm pretty good now at standing up for what I think is right, or saying what I think is right. You and I have had disagreements on this mm-hmm. podcast, right? In a way that isn't anger fueled, but I felt a lot of shame about the fact that I didn't do anything about my rape, in terms of, well, why didn't I do something, the court case or whatever, that I made the choice to, at that time, what was healthier for me. Then look back now and I go, but there are some things that I did, right? Like mm-hmm. I said, as women on this rowing team, we're going to look out for other women. As like the senior women on this rowing team, we're going to look out for the younger women. Like, I don't know if that change stayed after I left university, but I know, well, I was there. My team mm-hmm. looked out for other women. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there was some shame in like being a coward or not like pursuing it legally or not, mm-hmm. whatever, right? So there was definitely some shame there.
Yeah, in a way, it's almost like and I don't want to use this language, I'm not great with my words today. It's almost like a perfect crime, right? Because you do this terrible thing to someone and you kind of know that the system's not going to believe them. Their friends are not going to believe them. The things that protect you aren't going to believe them. So they can't even get recourse. And then even when they maybe do speak up, then they get kind of told, like, well, this can't be that much of a problem. I've never heard of it before. That guy's always been nice to me. Like these kinds of things where it's like, but I think that's the proof, right? Like clearly this is happening on a much larger scale than we can even fathom, because when it happens, people don't talk about it. So then there's like a confirmation bias here where, like, well, it can't be happening that often. I would hear about it if it was happening this
Or I've
often.
heard that person's so nice. Like, think about how many celebrities were
Oh,
like, oh,
yeah.
not that person. And the other thing is how many celebrities have gotten off,
Totally. Yeah.
like
Yeah.
that have been charged and then I'm sorry, but
Yeah.
gotten off. Like,
Well, and then they get like celebrated for it. Like, ah, oh, beat the charges. Oh, can't make it stick. Ha ha ha.
yeah.
And then what? Then that person also does it again, and they know in their head that they have almost like a path to follow to make sure they don't get caught. Like, what?
And
I
that's
don't
why I
know.
think there needs to be a different way of handling these sorts of cases legally. But there also needs to be a different way of handling these things socially, ethically, morally. And I think that's the bigger message of Me Too is create a space where we allow people to be believed, where we believe them, where our first reaction is to believe them, not our second reaction. Where the first gut reaction is to believe them, not to question them.
And it's so funny that you'd say that, because I think something sneaky is happening with Me Too now, because it has happened, right? Me Too happened. It was this huge moment. And now it's almost like when things come up, it's like, well, why now? Why not when Me Too was happening? Why did you wait another 4 years? Why did you keep waiting? Like it was almost like that was our window of time. So now if you bring it up later, it's kind of like, oh, well. And again, it's just another tool of not believing
Of like minimizing people
survivors.
and not believing them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Had an
Because, well,
opportunity when Me Too was in the news so much. Why are you talking about it now? You talk about it when you're ready. Again, big T trauma. This is stuff. Or maybe you didn't even realize it. Maybe you didn't even realize it happened to you at the time. Like, honestly, when that experience I had when I was working at a community center and one of the other employees like grabbed my ass. And I went to the supervisor and he was like, well, you have been flirting with him. I was like, yeah, you're right. I guess I have. And he was like, do you really want to file a harassment file? It's gonna go through the union and blah, 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 blah. And I look back now and I'm like, I just totally went along with it. And I was like, yeah, okay. And I actually forgot about that experience with that coworker grabbing my ass until it was kind of prepping. Like a couple of years ago, I was thinking about it and I was like, wait a minute. No, that's not cool. Like, I feel like, right. And so maybe you start telling your stories years and years later because at the time you didn't even realize it. Again, create a culture where we believe first, where your gut instinct is not to question. Your gut instinct and your gut reaction is to believe and support. And unfortunately or fortunately, we have to, for lack of a better word, normalize these stories. And by what I mean is not saying, oh, it's normal, it's okay, is that the more we tell the stories, the more people will hear them and have experiences of hearing them. And that will then train us to believe them. And that's why I'm telling my story. And that's why I do tell my story. This isn't a me coming out episode where it's the first time I've told my story. Like, I've been telling this story for years and years and years. This is actually the first time I've told it on a public forum, I guess. Like, it's going to be out there on the podcast. People can hear it 10 years from now, still on Spotify or Apple Podcasts if they both still exist 10 years from now or whatever, right? But we just got to keep telling our stories. And again, everybody experience matters. So that minimizing of like, well, that wasn't a rape. That was just someone grabbing your ass. It doesn't matter. It's still a violation. It's still a man. I'm talking men assaulting women, but I mean, I know that
I
like
know.
women assault men and stuff too, but it's still
Yes.
a man asserting power and control and making someone feel helpless and small and physically violated. Those feelings can be the same whether someone grabs your ass or whether someone rapes you. You're still having power asserted over you and you're still being physically violated. All stories matter. They all matter. They all matter.
Yeah, and sometimes those smaller stories also can be momentum building, right?
Yeah, and people
So
being like, oh, something similar like that happened to me at work too, or at a club or at a bar, and I didn't really think about it. But now that I look back, wow, the culture was so different then. Wow, the culture really did allow those things to happen. And I didn't feel like I could say anything or I was minimized. This is how we learn. This is how we learn. This is how we build knowledge. This is how we learn from each other. This is how we create change. Is having these conversations.
And I think women especially, we have a lot wrapped up in what our identity is. And I think a lot of women don't want to be seen as a bitch or, you know, any of these other things that we do to minimize women's experiences. So I think that's part of it too. Like,
Yeah, I mean, I'm still like afraid that like people from my hometown, I mean, I've talked about it a lot, but there's probably one person out there, maybe two, I don't know, that are gonna might listen to this and be like, oh, there's Victoria telling that story again. That's not true. I still have that fear inside of me. I mean, probably my ex-boyfriend. You know, he ever listens to this. He's like, yep, I accused her of cheating on me. And maybe he still believes I did cheat on me, the cheat on him. You know, I don't know. Or maybe he'll be like, oh man, I shouldn't have done that. And that's my hope is that if he hears this, he'll be like, oh man, I shouldn't have. Yep, I shouldn't have done that. Because that on it's like this big trauma happened to me. And then a bunch of other traumas happened right after that were related to the big trauma. And that's why I say if someone tells you something, tell them that you hear them and tell them that you believe them. Because minimizing it or having a reaction where you don't believe them is a trauma to them as well. And how can we minimize the amounts of traumas that happen to this person after the initial trauma happens? How can we minimize it and make them feel supported and heard?
Again, thank you so much for sharing your story with me and trusting me with it and trusting our listeners to hear it as well. Do you have any closing thoughts you want to include here?
I just want to say thank you for hosting the episode today and thank you for guiding me through it. I wasn't super nervous about it, but I was a bit nervous. You know, I'm going to go have some quiet time now because every time I do tell the story, it's still me connecting into myself and my essential self. So I just want to thank you for hosting and guiding the episode today. And I really appreciate you for being open to having this episode and for evolving Let's Relieve Regret with me too from our humble beginnings a little bit over a year ago to being able to create the space where we feel safer to have these bigger conversations too. So just thank you for that. And sit and process. If anything in this episode for you today, listeners, brought anything up for you, it's okay to sit and process. It's okay to have some quiet time. It's okay to have aha moments with yourselves and just be kind to yourself. For the rest of the day, I'm going to be kind to myself for the rest of the day and just and do what I need to do to feel good and connected.
Excellent. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you so much, Shadow. I appreciate you.
This episode of Let's Relieve Regret was produced by Shadow Ball and Victoria Mirbrusia. We are an independent podcast supported by you, our listeners.
You can become a supporter by donating $3, $5, or even $8 per month at www.letsrelieveregretpodcast.buzzsprout.com and click on the support button. You can find the link in the show notes.
Our goal is to empower as many women as possible to overcome the shame and guilt that accompanies regret.
If this podcast helped you have an aha moment, help us spread the word. It's free for you and it means the world to us.
Please follow us on Instagram at relieve.regret.
Tell two friends.
Or leave a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts.
Find all this information and more in the show notes. Okay.
Bye.